The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. Rioli, this time, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's a goal! Right on the Tigers! Whoa, what about that? A 4-3-60 in slow motion, just down the bars!
Oh, gee whiz. He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal!
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I suppose we should start on a serious note. Andy, the sending our best wishes to Michael Hurley's family and sort of wish him all the best for a speedy recovery after the weekend serious incident.
No doubt. It's... Well, actually... In fairness to him, as much as I'd like to mock him, he didn't really exaggerate it a great deal, and according to Caro, was going to admit that he actually staged a bit to get a free kick, but then probably wisely got advised not to say that. I don't want to be too.
No, I think there's been the issue of staging has had enough airtime this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's just a lot of people that, you know, friends and friends of the podcast, I talk about how negative social media has been. I think also that goes to the media as well. And I think the current state of lockdown for the majority of football journalists and a lot of people on Twitter is really affecting the tone of things, and perhaps even the tribunal a little bit.
I also think, we know there's been big job cuts right across the football media in the past year, and I think, there's definitely some voices who've decided that louder is better and that there's not much room for nuance in such a difficult media landscape, which is it's a sad reflection on what's already a difficult year in so many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just since we've brought up this topic, it is good that the sort of the people who are involved in the online abuse of Dylan Grimes, that, sort of if you actually look at the law, that the law was passed for a reason, and what went on, without dignifying it, without talking about it too much, it seems like a textbook case. So, I think it's easy to get carried away about the most negative sort of 2% of slime on the bottom of the social media pond, sort of the evil dark sentiment. That's what the laws are there for, and it should go outside of the sort of the lighthearted world of fan football podcasts, which we are. And Nick, in all seriousness, there's a very serious issue that I think we are quite qualified to talk about, and that is Ivan Soldo having his career-high possession total.
Well, he was one of three players on the night with a career-high, but I did have a feeling that he was the one that you were going to want to lead with.
I've got quite a lot of Soldo analysis coming up for later in the podcast, so we might want to talk about...
Colour me shocked. Look, before we start talking players and the games, can you allow me one more moment of ranting? That, John Worsfold complaining about the umpires afterwards just struck me as being straight out of the Sheedy rule book, where if you played that game 100 times, I think Essendon win maybe 10 of them. Well, they were badly outclassed, and it was only by dint of our poor kicking and their very accurate kicking and some junk time goals at the end that the scoreline was even close. So, you know, back in your box.
Yeah, look, you're right. Actually, you know, probably there might have been an upset more often than that. If you like as I said in the commentary, a lot of the players were cooked very early on in the game. Mm. So maybe the slightly strange conditions could have led to more aberrant results. But bottom line is, on the expected shots metric, you know, you could cut this a million different ways. But on, you know, we had 70% forward half. We had 72% of the ball in our forward half. So, you know, that's an enormous dominance. Mm. The expected shots was a 40-point victory. 88 to 48. So, like, that's, you know, if you look at these metrics, and the inside 50s was a huge domination as well. Like, this is not, there's no argument that Essendon were robbed. Probably that Tim and Woody reversal was unfortunate. You know, other than that, it was actually a real shame because it overshadowed what was probably the nicest goal of the game by us, which was we went down the other end, went coast to coast, and Jack took a magnificent mark, and then Bolton kicked a beautiful snap.
That was a lovely goal. Yeah.
Look, and I get it, you know, you're talking about a second-rate club possibly coming onto a third-rate club, being irrelevant for a long period of time, and you get this one moment of actually, like, potentially having a relevant victory for the year against like a club that people actually care about, and you know,
and the broader point of, you know, Worsfold, you know, he's a former premiership coach and he's a proud man, and you know, they've gone nowhere for 5 years. You know, there's no sign of them actually having improved in that period of time at all, and they've traded away high draft picks to try and accelerate the rebuild. You know, they've already traded away their second and third round draft picks for this year's draft. Yeah, they've pushed all their chips in, and yeah, they've got very little to show for it. So
yeah, and the fans are.
I can understand why Worsfold.
Yeah, and the fans on this one.
Yeah, Worsfold is never going to coach senior football again. So, you know, I can understand why he's frustrated. But
and the fans sort of lost their minds too, because you know they knew they didn't have many chance having used the victory. Like, do you remember how many times we'd go home after we'd sort of played Hawthorn in the late 80s and thought, you know, we were within three goals at the start of the third quarter, and if only blah had happened and blah had happened and blah had happened, we would have won. You know, you get frustrated by the continual lose. So you lose a bit of perspective. But, you know, I think it's just important to remember that we are a big, important, relevant club. And they are a minor irrelevancy who, middle-aged journalists still think are important because they barrack for them in the younger days. So, you know, aside from the obviously very obnoxious fans on the fringe, I think we can be a bit gracious.
10-game winning streaks against both Carlton and Essendon.
That's
pretty good times.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got to accept our real rivals are now, you know, the teams like Geelong and West Coast teams we play highly competitive, good games against.
West Coast, absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, so look, the game, even though we were playing minor opposition, the game was still... You know, you can lose these games. You have banana peel games, and no one around us is on the ladder is dropping games. So it was very important that we kept winning, and we got it done. And
and it was a great occasion, like the welcome to country at the start, and just how dementedly excited so much of the crowd was for so much of the game. Like it really felt like a thing.
You know, one of my guilty pleasures at work events, Nick, is watching people do really lengthy welcome to countries, and the organisers get very awkward as it goes on and on. But that welcome to country, though, I think everyone who heard it just loved it, and it only went for 2 minutes, but it was a very powerful and very upbeat. Like, it was the perfect thing to hear before a football game. So, and the football boats, I love the football boats. Dusty's was fantastic. Marlon's was great. It was just it was a really fun spectacle, and you know, obviously it's a shame that they couldn't do it at the G in front of the faithful. But if you couldn't do it that way, this was the best possible alternative.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So, Nick, this might be the first game where big game in a while where Dusty was best on ground and might have been slightly robbed for the medal.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, on the coaches' votes, both he and Bolton got 9 votes. So, you know, they were both great. You know, it's like asking to choose between your children.
And the thing, Bolton finished really well, so I think that his best quarter was his last, where he had 11 touches. Talk about them individually. Dusty had 650 metres gained, 17 contested possessions, and was still very high on the score involvements. Was not the highest, was not team leading. A very interesting team leader of score involvements, which I'll talk about in a tick. But just was everywhere, doing all the hard work. 7 clearances. It was a game where Dusty sort of put the team on his back and did really hard work. And you know, a lot of modern Dusty is he's the finisher, but this week he was the engine room, and it was lovely to watch, and there was still plenty of beautiful Dusty moments.
There was, look, yeah, both he and Bolton were great. I just feel, you know, it's been so long since we've had a full complement of midfielders, you know, that we've had Pressier and Edwards for about a third of the season, you know, Cochin for barely a half. The midfield's been hugely under strength most of the time, but I thought the combination of, you know, Bolton and Martin dominating, complemented, you know, Jack Graham had one of his better games, and Pickett was very productive off the wing. I thought the midfield, and, you know, career high for Soldo. Midfield certainly wasn't the problem.
Well, no, I mean, you don't dominate all the key metrics about supplying to the forward line unless your midfield's completely on top, which it was. On your point about on Graham, which is I should mention Bolton. You know, he's a very small kid to be getting 12 contested possessions, but he does it. The guy, if you looked at his stats sight unseen with what kind of player he was, you'd sort of expect a fairly hulking inside mid, at least for this week. All over the place, crucial engine player, and great game. But Graham, he had low 20s, which is good for him. He led the team on score involvements, and a couple of his hits inside 50 were just beautiful. Twice he laced out a leading forward beautifully. And just the last 2 weeks is just a different Jack Graham. You know, no, the shoulder strapping has come off, and he looks like he's running on top of the ground. He looks live. He's doing smart things with a contested ball. My opinion of him has gone up a lot in 2 weeks.
Look, would that we can all, you know, timing is so key in life, and that there's media speculation about him coming out of contract, he's almost in career best form.
Yeah, it's certainly good timing. I suspect that it's, well, I'd bet a lot of money that's completely coincidental. I think it's probably got more to do with the fact that his shoulder healed a bit during the break and he's got some confidence back. But yeah, you're right, it is somewhat timely.
Hmm. Speaking of betting, noting once again that we don't condone sports gambling, but is it rude to suggest that you had a financial interest in how well Pickett played this week?
I did. I must admit, Nick, it was such an irrational thing, but Pickett has only cleared 16 possessions before. Like, he was going at about 20% of his games. He was getting more 16 possessions or more, but that was the bet. And I just saw the boots, and I somehow thought he'd be up for it. I don't know. It's irrational, but I just, He's such a great story. I just wanted to barrack every touch he did on the night. And, yeah, he got 18. He had 600 metres gained, Nick, which is very impressive.
Yeah.
That normally corresponds, for people who don't know, with a sort of 25-touch-plus game of a long kicker. So, you know, obviously he was using his long boot effectively. His ratings were okay without being amazing. But sort of the question is, how's he going as a wing? I guess the most immediate comparison for him is Camden McIntosh, who also had 18 possessions.
Yeah, also going. They both played well, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you compare them side by side, you know, just to give you this year, Marlon's been averaging 12 touches a year, so banking on him to break 15 was brave, but you know, it was the night. But you know, Camden's a bit ahead of him. He's getting about 14. Pickett's been kicking a goal basically every second game. A bit generous there, but close enough. Pickett's pressure acts are okay, but not amazing. Contested possessions, Camden. Surprisingly enough, I guess, meters gained, Camden's in front. Per disposal, Marlon would be slightly in front, but, Marlon's got slightly more score involvements. So overall, you'd actually suggest that, sort of an advanced metric this year that Camden is marginally better, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I don't know. But they're both playing well at the moment. I think the best thing about it right now is that we don't have to make a decision, and you know, we've got time for it to play out. I think being on a bigger ground again helped. You know, just having a bit more space. Actually, speaking of space, look, I do. I thought part of the reason and why we struggled to convert, just a few of our forwards are out of form at the moment. But I think Dan Rioli is coming back into form, and that was really great to see. You know, they mentioned on the telecast that he'd requested 40 family tickets.
Yeah. It was funny, actually. It was actually, I think it was a fairly pro-Essendon crowd, but Dan obviously had a
lot. I was disappointed by that. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard not to love Tippin Woody.
I think the Sheedy did a lot to bring the game, and yeah, having the Michael Long legacy as well. Horace Rioli Jr., come on.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I completely agree on Rioli. On the forwards more generally, I think we'll talk a bit more on its selection. It's just not quite working.
No.
And look, form's maybe a nice way of saying it, but I'm not quite sure the structure. Maybe we can talk about it when we talk about team selection. But, you know, sort of Castagna's not quite working this year. You make a really good point that these numbers aren't actually that down from last year.
Well, he hasn't. He's winning the ball, but he hasn't kicked a goal in a month. Arts is sort of quite hit and miss when his goal kicking. He's kicked multiple goals in quite a few games, but he's also gone goalless in quite a few games.
He's averaging 9 disposals a game, which is not a lot.
It's not a lot. The Sydney Stacks found it hard to recapture last year's form. Yeah,
One thing Stackey is doing, and probably it's a function of him also playing a few games in the midfield, but Stackey's pressure acts are much higher than all the other forwards that you've mentioned. So that's, you know, that's something that he has sort of quietly bubbling away in the background for him. But yeah, there's a lot of, and Chol is just, the last 2 weeks has just been unsighted, basically. because he often kicks, pops up, or through kicked the goal last week. You know, he often adds a bit of creative grunt to the forward line. And yeah, I'm certainly, we've cut to the chase, but there was something I was very much thinking for selection is, you know, it makes sense. You'd have a reasonable, even though a winning team, you might rotate three guys in and out of the team this week just because short break, pretty taxing game.
Well, and, you know, they've just flown, done a 2.5 hour flight. It's a shortish break. We played a game in 30-degree weather. I think rotating a couple of guys is entirely reasonable.
And I think maybe a smart player like Higgins. I was just thinking with Castagna or Arts, for instance. Like, they're not as good. I think, especially Castagna, I think, you know, one of his great strengths in 2007 was that he was another marking option. You know, he at least created a contest. I'm not sure that skill's as important now that we have two bigs and potentially a third when Joel's playing, rotating through the forward line. And I just sort of wonder whether maybe Castagna or maybe Arts, it's time to rotate them out. Because, you know, Rioli had his time in the twos and is actually playing quite well, as he pointed out. So they just seem like the natural one. And, you know, maybe it's time to also give Caddy a go because he, even though he's been playing further back on the wing, you know, he's an intelligent player who can pick his way through a heavy zone. I just doesn't feel like things are quite... I mean, it's easy to say when you dominate the inside 50s and you know, don't kick and wants to score. But yeah, look, and again, as you pointed out, that's partly us not taking opportunities, but just doesn't feel like it's definitely, if you were to pick the three areas of the, if you simplistically talk about the three areas of the field, the forward line is definitely the weakest link at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a partly a function of the defense is in really good shape. I suppose that since Sarah Black mentioned it last week, we shouldn't have been surprised about Nathan Board being dropped. And actually, watching the game, it did make sense. Like they had a couple of talls, but quite a few smaller players as well. So maybe the team balance wouldn't have been right, but
it made sense about from the perspective they didn't want to drop Oleg after. Actually, Leppel was very warm about Oleg in his coach's corner with Richo this week. So, you know, that might have just been Leppel being a good coach and sort of talking up his charges, but because I would have thought the obvious move this week would be to drop Oleg for abroad for the much taller West Coast.
I did. Really, he was really trying to take the game on early. And pretty much the whole game was. I think the in commentary they called him out for having a shot at goal in the first quarter, and yeah, I do think it didn't feel very Richmondy to. Have the shot from 45, you know, sort of running in a phalanx down the field with players next to you. Although, according to the press release that I got from the Markov Politburo, he seems to have had 47 disposals and kicked 11 goals in the game. So we probably should have mentioned him earlier.
Indeed. Our incorrect thought has been noted. Bolter was again notable in his solidness and lack of mistakes. And I was looking actually at his...
Well, it is solid. Does solid underestimate that he sort of... You know, James Stewart did kick a couple of goals, which was kind of annoying, but Bolter won the overwhelming majority of his one-on-one contests on the night, which was pretty good fun.
Yeah, actually, Nick, funny you should mention that. On the marking contest, I was looking at the stats today about where Bolter stacks up in his winning one-on-one contests. And it clearly is only referring to marking contest. And it's sort of the Richmond defenders that have had significant reps on this stat. Guess where Bolter compares to Dave Asprey in winning contested defensive possessions? So percentage one.
I'm assuming it's good.
It's identical.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, bless.
So they both win about 80% of the time, which is Dylan's better, but the person who really stands out as being the worst in the club is Broad on that measure, by the way.
But we've talked about that before. I'd actually thought he'd got better on match this year compared to previous seasons, but...
Yeah, I mean, that was just a this year measure, so you can still be improved and still be the worst.
Improved and best.
Yeah, because Asprey's one of the better players in the AFL for that, as we know. And Noah going at the same level is actually quite impressive at that age. Just to highlight youth, as Bolton is the best rated player in the AFL at his age or below. You know, age really matters. Once you go above, when you get 1 year older, you start to, and 2 years older, you start to get, you know, even higher levels. But, you know, age really matters.
I know that in such a weird season that Bolton, Baker and Bolter, did they come out?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Anyway, the three of them have really improved this year. You know, the oldest of them's 22. So yeah, it's been extremely encouraging. Speaking of defenders, I thought Basha Hawley sort of looked like himself when he got the ball. He just got the ball less than he used to.
Yeah, a lot less. But look, he's coming off a long break. He's got to be a bit rusty. His score involvements were actually very good for him. I'm not going to read too much into it. And, you know, he's coming into a team where he's no longer the alpha dog. Like, they've been playing for a while without him, and they've sort of worked out how, you know, there's been a chemistry without him that it's been established. He did manage to adequately fill the Derek Eglemazie-Smith shoes. It was a low sample size, but he was the worst. Poor Eggs was the worst on the club by that early measure I was quoting.
Yeah. Yes, we've talked about quite a few players, but really I feel like you've got at least another 5 minutes on Ivan Soldo.
Well, okay, so look, they took two big rucks into the game, and Belchamber's actually...
Two specialist rucks.
Specialist rucks, and Belchamber's now has an injury, so, you know, let's not get carried away, but... You know, Soldo was very good, got plenty of senior clearances. We actually didn't dominate the hit-outs or hit-outs to advantage, but Soldo did a lot of good, intelligent things, but he was really good around the ground too. Like, as I said, he had his career highs with the 17 possessions. And it sort of, like, it was a very good, solid game, except for the moment where Dusty, you know, referencing that earlier Kill Bill reference of, you know, Dusty showed him the ultimate mark of respect of kicking the ball to him in the center square when he was hot. Like, you could see Dusty looked, he ran around, just checked there wasn't a better option. All right, I'm kicking it to the ruckman. And then, Soldo got clean Boldo by the football, as it went between his legs.
Yeah.
Would have got him 18 possessions. But other than that, he was very solid around the ground. He sort of, you know, maybe got a bit of confidence playing on against a younger player. He did step up and you got to be the alpha dog in that position when you're the sort of, it's one of the rare times where he's playing against a guy less experienced than him, and he showed him his boss. But Nick, so I sort of took a look at Soldo's stats as a ruckman, because I'm, you know, going back to this earlier conversation about the year, is like, the fundamental thing that we've liked Soldo for is great value for second rack. He's great value for a Cat B rookie. He's a great value who's a guy who barely played football before, basically came down to his club because his cousin played for us. like that's the sort of the starting point with the Soldo value discussion for us. So it's sort of it's a bit different to the you know, just a pure looking at his output. But actually, he's getting to the point where, in some measures, he's legitimately good. And if you look at hit-out win percentage now in the AFL, once you cull out the sort of guys who've barely played any games, he's fifth in the AFL. And his hit-outs to advantage aren't quite as good, but they're still pretty good. And while you're telling the good news story, him and Nank and Soldo are second and fifth, respectively, for pressure acts amongst all ruckmen. Once you again remove the guys who hardly ever play. So look, his biggest weakness is he doesn't get much possession around the ground. He's in the bottom third for rucks, the starting rucks for that. But look, as an actual ruckman, he's getting to the point where not only is he respectable, but he's in the tier just below the elite. So yeah, it's getting like this week will be a really interesting test with Dick Nat, who, my God, he's good when you take a hard look at the stats. We can talk about him a bit later.
Oh yeah.
But like he's starting to respect, he's starting to go past the obscure podcast fan favorite point to legitimately decent AFL ruck.
Yeah. It is.
Thank you for indulging that.
We are at a very interesting point because Nank's no longer on the injury list that published today. So he's presumably a very good chance, you know, to come in. Soldo was on there, was mentioned that he was having an injury in the last quarter, and has been carrying a lot of the load. Like, I wonder if there's a chance that he'll be managed this week.
It's a good chance.
But yeah, I mean,
the only problem with it is that this is the week where you really want to play Soldo ahead of Nank. They both, like, what's the hope with Soldo is that he could actually take on Nick Nack's strength and at least neutralise it to a reasonable extent if he rucked well. Nank won't threaten Nick Nat at all, and the ruck, he will get his ass kicked. But the only hope there is that he gets a few touches around the ground. When this happened in 2007 and it was in Western Australia, it didn't go well. A lot of things didn't go well that day, but it especially didn't go well in the ruck. So, yeah, I completely agree. Actually, now would be the perfect time to give Soldo a rest. Unfortunately, it's the completely wrong time to do it again. So it'll be really interesting selection. And, you know, as a Soldo fanboy, I really wanted to see him against the best. And then, yeah, the question is, could you drop Chole for Nank? Because Chole's doing basically nothing at the moment in the last 2 weeks. Looks a bit cooked. But West Coast don't play two professional rucks. So, yeah, it's not an easy one, is it?
No, and it was hard looking at Essendon on the weekend. It was hard to justify having the two specialist rucks. Like, they just, neither of them looked in any way threatening as forwards. So, yeah, tough gig. I mean, and I think I agree with everything you said about the problem that Nick Nack presents, but I also think, you know, the club's has traditionally taken a long view to the regular season of making sure we get everyone through the finals. So if they think if he needs a rest, then they'll probably give him one, regardless of opponent. But
yeah, I was wondering about that, Nick, because a little bit of me wondered whether we do that to prevent injury, but do we do that as well to keep them fresh? Like, it feels like we're really good at resting players who we think might be at risk of injury, i.e. Cochin. But I just wonder, do like, you know, a lot of guys play 22 games when they're fit. So, yeah. Do we actually rest guys just to keep them fresh for the finals? I don't know. I'm open-minded. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, if we make three changes this week, I think, and bring in some guys who've been drop a few guys who've been playing decently, I think we will know that they're definitely sort of using bench rotation. But if they don't make any changes, I think we'll know that they only do it for injury.
Hmm. Anyone else you wanted to mention from the game?
No, but I'm very much in the camp that Jack is back and is a valuable and important. You know, he's not the best player on the ground, but he's a valuable, important role player.
No. Yeah, he's playing better and certainly contributing.
And an excellent foil for Lynch.
Excellent foil for Lynch, yeah. So, got a little bit of off-field news today. Very disappointing announcement of that the club won't be able to field the VFLW team for next year due to the cuts to the soft cap, which sort of does feel, the AFL's to be commended for not cutting salaries of AFLW players, but it does sort of, if you sort of don't, you can't just look after the top of the tree without watering the roots. At risk of a painful analogy, and I think we've seen for the men this year just how disrupted it's been not having a proper functional second tier competition. So yeah, it is certainly a disappointment.
Yeah, no, look, I get it for a lot of people who, you know, a lot of people disappointed because they like to, you know, it's a great thing to say you play for Richmond even if you never play once. But, you know, it's the one thing I'll say, and we know nothing about what actually was going on inside the financial decisions, but it's not quite the same as the VFL in the sense it's an off-season competition. So you can sort of see there's probably a stronger argument. Well, we can feed them into the next tier. They'll boost it up, but they're not losing the continuity they gain from playing just with Richmond players because, you know, if they get picked, they don't get to play for the ones next week. Do you know what I'm saying? That they're not concurrent seasons.
Yeah.
So it's not.
But I think in terms of pulling a team together, I think having them all play together, or most of them play together in a VFLW team does really help development.
Yeah, probably. I think that's definitely true. I just don't think it's probably quite as bad as if you're playing the season at the same time. But I do agree with your call point.
Yeah, and look, I do. Sort of what also worries me about it is sort of there's, you know, with, you know, the Suns sacking senior assistant coaches, like, I think, you know, everything that you hear about revenue projections for next year are not pretty. So there's probably more painful cuts to come.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's probably wise not to get any of those comparisons. Well, you have X, how can you do X when you have Y? I think that's, any of that stuff's premature because you may not have X or Y by the end of it. So, yeah. Certainly no high horse getting on by me. No high horse mounting by me.
That's reassuring.
That was a great analogy.
How did you feel about for the 5 minutes where it seemed as if Alex Rance was going to be the bachelor?
Yeah, Alex Rance.
Yeah, that's probably, look, I'm totally in the space where, you know, he's had an extremely tumultuous year that we know about, you know, retiring from football, breakdown of his marriage. You know, I think anything is possible. I think a comeback is entirely possible. I think something in the public eye is entirely possible. Strange times.
It is. You could see perhaps why the club got slightly jacked of him by the end, but it is what it is. Good for him. I hope he comes back, but I'm putting zero emotional investment in it. I was just going to say briefly on the staging. It's clearly, you can find 50 examples like it every week that don't get pulled up. But of the two, the Vlostom one is particularly ridiculous. He doesn't carry on. He doesn't stage it. He just throws his head back. He does get a whack in that general area, and then he gets up straight away. It was just, whether or not it was 50, it's like blaming the player for the umpire giving a slightly soft 50. That kind of stuff happens. The Grime signal was probably a bit of a...
Surely Joel Selwood would have been changed out of it. Out of the game already if milking incidental high contact was a punishable offence.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a sort of... we're reacting. The mob seems angry.
Oh, my God. Sorry, Andy. Dangerfield just flew past. You still had momentum from half-time in the preliminary final.
Circumnavigated the world four times since that day. We're going to react to the angry mob by giving it what it wants. Always a good strategy. West Coast, huge game.
Worked well at the tribunal. This feels extremely frustrating as the rivalry we should have had over the past couple of years, but haven't. That we've hardly ever played them. We've never played them in a final. We've won the last three premierships between us. Several of the games we've played against them have been fantastic. It's all set up to be a really good game.
It is, and as they're an amazing clearance team, they're an amazing hit out team. They've got a wonderful forward line, with lots of exciting players, and not just the big marking ones. It's just so much. It's actually quite exciting, really, isn't it?
It is. Look, if you want to butt, at the end of that sentence about all the things that the Eagles do well. The best team they've beaten away from Perth this season is the 16th ranked, the 16th on the ladder, Sydney Swans.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Is one of the things I was just about to say was they don't play very well in Queensland, which, there was a lot going on then, but they sucked when they were up here.
They've played 14 games and 9 of them have been in Perth, and they've won all 9. So it's reasonable to say that, they're certainly a very good team, but it's reasonable to say that, their record is a part of both good play and having an extremely long and settled stint at home. Noting, of course, that when people get snippy about Richmond playing a lot of games at the MCG, we play them with the other team's fans in the stadiums. It's quite different. Playing in front of your captive crowd with the other team having flown across the continent to be there.
The statistics clearly bear that out and the umpire advantage. They are a very good team. It's so weird, isn't it? That we're both coming off these really short breaks. They got one more day rest, but they've got to fly further. They had a pretty tough game too. There's just so many different variables, that are in the match, but, I'm really excited about this. It felt like that, Cochin just sort of set out the Essendon game once it looked like we were going to win, and so he should still be fresh. Dusty played another huge game, but he's in fine fiddle. It just feels to the selection, it almost, there's a great case, I think, to bring in the sort of perhaps Broad, Caddy and Higgins. two premiership two dual premiership players, and one fairly, he goes a fairly baton hardened player by this stage, freshen up the team, give them a few different angles. And look, you know, if Tom Lynch had been suspended, it wouldn't have been the end of the world, because he probably is due for a rest anyway. It's a fascinating game, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Broad has to come back in, because they're a very tall team in attack, between, you know, Kennedy, Darling, Oscar Allen's an emerging tall forward, and Waterman's not bad. A lot of big boys there. The other end of the ground, I'm worried that we're just going to kick the ball down McGovern's throat all day. Like, he is a genuinely elite intercept player, and some of our forward 50 entries haven't been pretty in recent weeks. So, yeah, that'd be... Yeah, and you've mentioned about how good a clearance team they are, and that obviously starts with Nick Knapp. I've got some mature bodies in midfield as well. And yeah, they're, you know, in some ways they're like us as well. And they've got some younger, lower profile players like Brander or Rotham, who are, you know, they also played well last week against the Giants. So yeah, it's going to be a really good game. We're slight favourites.
Nick Knapp really, like, just as I said before, statistics are amazing for him, but you know, Gaff and, Gaff and Yo, and like, there's a lot of people to worry about there. I'm really looking forward to the game. It'll be a really good test Thursday night. Bit random, but it's just in this funny, crazy season, you sort of just got to take the games as they come. And, like, this is the first decent, I guess Brisbane were a decent team, but this is the, you know, first time we really regard as a key rival. And I guess it's one of the luxuries of being at the top of the ladder is you don't actually...
Poor Adelaide.
Oh, sorry, I wrote that game from my memory. Apologies. I put that down to a brain explosion by one or two players, and you know, the short break, and having to travel to Port Adelaide under very suboptimal conditions.
And we do, you know, we talk about it every week, but we have some really good players to come back into the team. Although, you know, it feels like, you know, Asprey and Pressier are still all listed as being 2 to 4 weeks until they come back. You know, Shane Edwards' earliest he's back is. It's the last round.
I think the White Demo was talking. The White Demo was talking was that he'll definitely come in that last week. He basically said, "Shit, it doesn't need that much time to get ready, so he'll play." The one last thing I was going to say, sorry, I should have mentioned this earlier when I was talking about Tom Lynch, is if you looked at Dimmer's press conference and his usual, you know, it was the controversy last week, which was a bit unfortunate, but you don't come to hear. Come to this podcast to get moral judgments. But the one thing Dimmer is absolutely not backing down on is the sort of the aggressive football thing. He said again in the press conference, and he was lovely and he was jovial, but he said, "I've been around a lot of good teams and they all played on the edge. And Tom Lynch plays on the edge and our team will play on the edge." And, you know, that's the team, that's the ethos. They play it hard and, you know, most of the play at time, they play it fairly, and it's wonderful to watch. I know we say this almost every week, Nick, but you know, thank God we have this Richmond team in this era, because God, they're great to follow.
I know. Look, I both completely agree with everything he said, and you know, think that 99% of the Tom Lynch noise has been, you know, largely nonsense. The David Schwartz comments.
Yeah.
He'd probably walk back if he had a second chance. And honestly,
well, sorry, he hasn't.
If that would be me, I would have told Dimmer to maybe take a night off and see what sort of entertainment options he can find on the Gold Coast. Frankly, under COVID restrictions. Because,
Yeah, well,
it's a stressful time, and and the media bubble, I think, has felt, you know, fairly hostile. Yeah. For the club, so
it has. And look, in fairness, what Swatch said was actually really strong. So yeah, there we go. And look, he doesn't get it in real time. He gets it sort of afterwards, and he's sort of, you know, he's around the side of defending his player. But yeah, the comments were certainly the comments were unfortunate. But I think the broader point is the comments are a 20-second comment in a press conference on a Thursday, which he's doing it to make a point to his team. Like, it's not the key issue here. The key issue is how the team is coached and trained at 99, and how it plays 99% of the time. And
the team, for all the media hype, it's not coming across like it's affecting the team. They're going pretty well. We are up to our eyeballs.
And to repeat last week, Tom Lynch has a really short tribunal record. Like, he's only had one serious incident.
Nearly a decade.
There are plenty of,
and he's in his 10th season.
There are plenty of choir boys who play far less violent positions, who get targeted far less, who've got done things far worse.
And many of the high profile key forward media commentators have all. Worst record when you look at it.
Well, you will know that an awful lot of them came out to defend Tom Lynch this week, so yeah.
I hope he kicks a bag this week. I hope it's a great game. I really hope it's a great game. As with every Richmond game, I hope it's a 100-point victory.
If Soldo beats Nick Nat in the hitouts and hitouts to advantage, my heart might explode with joy.
Yeah, we'll do an emergency podcast right after the game. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time.
He's had four shots on goal, and that was his worst.
Big arm takes the mark, and it's all too much for Leon.
Well, he's an accurate set shot, the big fella. 4 out of 5 so far this year.
Make it 5 out of 6. The skipper goes and goes, and then tries to lace it out, but no, he doesn't. He kicks a goal. How sweet it is, eh? Pickett lines up.
There are alarm bells going off everywhere at the moment. Pickett's having an influence in his first game of footy. Started with him.
Yep.
Dusty's dangerous. The swarming pressure is overwhelming.
Didn't want the body contact. He kept the body free. The pickup's unbelievable. That's a play of the game. That is a play of the game.
We underestimate footy brain and Dustin Martin. You look at his physical ability. Champion data would tell us 7 out of the last 9 finals, you can make the case for being best on ground.
We never weep until the final siren's gone. Like the tiger of old, we're strong and we're bold, for we're from Tiger. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
And I think they were a better team last year than they are now.